And right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. The Media Beat, of course, comes to you live every Friday. We rebroadcast it Monday after our 12 noon news and also on the weekends. David also is a PBS television correspondent. He reports on ethics and belief, and you can find him at his own great website, themediabeat.us. And we welcome David in this morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Good to be back with you. Reporting in from the media capital of the world, of course, New York City.
Well, there's a lot to rummage through this morning here, David.
Just like every other week recently, or just about every week for the past 4 years.
Yes,
I think.
It's
been a busy news week. Where would you like to start?
Well, I guess we'll start with the latest thing that happened, and that is the Breonna Taylor shooting. The person that gets charged with an endangerment charge. He's not even the one that shot into that apartment. He shot into another apartment. The two officers that shot into an apartment where she was hit with 7 of those bullets, by the way, and died. Those officers have not been charged with anything. And once again, it is not the type of thing that will cool or make black Americans or Americans of any other color other than white anything more than nervous, because it appears on the surface, of course, to be systemic racism. Now, we don't know all the details. We really don't yet, but they'll come out. But this is not what our powder keg needed at this time.
Well, yes, exactly. It's occurring against a background, of course, and the background, as you rather sharply describe it, could well be seen as a powder keg, and this is yet another spark, an unwanted piece of police misconduct. Cops involved, of course, have been fired, and one was fired in particular at the time. His employers, the local police force, described him as firing blindly, and that was enough to get him fired. But clearly, when the case comes to the state attorney general of Kentucky, a black man and also a Republican, and also to a Kentucky grand jury, we have the result now that no one's being charged with anything concerned with the killing of Breonna Taylor. This one charge, which carries not a light sentence, but a certainly lighter sentence than would be involved in homicide, the lighter alleged offense of firing into someone else's apartment with wanton disregard for the safety of neighbors. Not, of course, the kind of outcome that most people who have been disturbed by the killing of Breonna Taylor expected to see, wanted to see, and there is, of course, outrage. There are, of course, protests and a curfew, and horrifyingly enough, a couple of cops injured in gunfire just before the curfew. It's a dangerous and volatile situation, clearly, and the reporting on it has been, run the usual gamut from cold kind of what did you expect through to outrage, reflecting, I think, the feelings of many people who both live in the Kentucky region, throughout Kentucky, not just in Louisville. There have been protests running for months, and of course it's now become, or it gradually became over that time, and now it is certainly, without a doubt, a national issue. Protests here in New York City, no doubt in Connecticut too. Another piece of inflammatory peace behavior and misbehavior, and clearly the suspicion of misbehavior, misconduct at a broader level at the state, by the state judicial system, not promising at all. Indeed, really threatening to the nation's peace of mind.
All right, we can, another interesting part which hasn't really been brought up on network news, and that is the fact that under a different administration and under a different Justice Department, charges could possibly be filed by the federal government, either a hate crime statute or whatever. But under this administration, that's not going to happen.
Yes, the frequent resource that can be turned to is the federal measure of investigating for an abuse of the murdered or the killed individual's civil rights. That's often been done. And would it happen in this case? Well, extremely unlikely. And a Justice Department headed by William Barr, you're quite right to think that it was extremely, it would have been extremely unlikely, and it's certainly not going to happen, without a doubt. Sensible reporting of the situation would sense that that would be the case. So we're not going to see that option taken.
All right, let's switch over to international. Four people were stabbed near the Charlie Hebdo office. Once again, that trial is going on, and once again, four people were wounded in Paris.
Yes, again, a case that in itself is horrific enough, but the public reaction to it and a reaction of individuals of not necessarily very sound minds getting involved too sort of increases the temperature. And we have in the Charlie Hebdo case, a situation where, all the sort of democratic values that we cherish were trampled upon. Murder of people just doing their jobs under what in the United States would be regarded as the practice, the full and enthusiastic practice of the principle of the First Amendment, freedom of speech. Journalists are murdered in their place of work, horrific enough, but all the ripples that have come from it are just more confirmation that we live in heightened times of a distressed state, often riven upon sectarian lines or ethnic lines or religious grounds, and yet again we've got a situation which is spiraling, not exactly out of control, but certainly in a horrific direction.
We'll stay out of the country for just a moment and go to a couple other stories. Something that I can't remember happening in my lifetime, not that I'm a big church follower or church news follower, but a high-ranking Vatican official was forced to resign by the Pope. He was involved in a deal to invest in a luxury London building,
in my old home district of London, Chelsea. Yes. A place of extraordinary rocketing property values. If you're going to get involved in a property scandal, Chelsea's probably the place to do it. And if you're a churchman at a high level in the Catholic Church, I think you're just giving yet more evidence of that church being, a repository for people in authority who believe that they can get away with things because they are in a position of authority. It's one of the problems that, highlighted by, the Boston Globe newspaper's investigations under the banner of Spotlight of sexual abuse by Catholic priests has changed the landscape of American attitudes towards members of the Catholic Church. And of course, sexual abuse in many countries by Catholic priests has been reported on very fully. Australia, for instance, possibly reporting on cases involving the highest of authority, a cardinal. But again, it's in this case, in the financial realm, it's a cardinal who's been accused and of course, demoted, as you say. He's still, technically speaking, a cardinal, but he's been stripped of all the privileges, well, most of the privileges that a cardinal has. No one's ever tried to claim that just because you happen to wear clerical robes, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a morally good person. But there is something, I think, profoundly disturbing about the breadth, I guess, and the depth of corruption that we see reported in the Catholic Church worldwide.
And let's go to North Korea, because Kim Jong-un apologized for the killing of the South Korean.
Yes, a rare bit of Catholic confessional almost from the leader of North Korea. You don't often hear him apologizing, do you?
Not only did he apologize, but he actually gave over exactly what had happened and how it happened, and that it shouldn't have happened. I mean, once they found the guy's body that they shot, by the way, 10 times, he was still alive, and they decided to kill him there and then burn his body. So
I'm sure not an uncommon practice amongst North Korean guards. Yes, but outrageous. But what is interesting, you're absolutely right, a major change in behavior this one time. Let's see if it has its echoes in any future conduct. But one time and one time only, Kim Il-jung is prompted to make an apology. And I guess apologizing to people on the southern side of that border between the two countries is probably what is foremost in his mind. That's the audience, I suspect, for this particular apology.
All right, now we can come back to the fiasco.
I'd like to do something that bridges the outside world with our current world. Can we bring up our fanfare again? Because I think it's an appropriate moment to mark something really excellent.
Yeah, I think we can do this here.
Yeah, that's the fanfare for our Find the Good and Praise It slot. And it's it's an award this week for someone who richly reserves the idea of practicing the good and very, very appropriately having it praised. But he died this week. So in a sense, we might have been better off playing taps on the bugle. But the man involved is Sir Harold Evans, Harry Evans, the editor of the New York of the Sunday Times in England, the London Times itself, the Daily Times, and many other organs of journalism on this side of the Atlantic as well. In fact, the Washington Post, in reporting his death on Tuesday at the age of 92, called him a crusading editor on both sides of the Atlantic. I think Harry would appreciate a bugle fanfare more than taps. He was that kind of upward and outward and forward-looking journalist that I certainly admired. He wasn't a perfect journalist in many ways. He annoyed a lot of people who worked for him. He made life very difficult. He was something of a perfectionist, and he was somewhat quixotic at times. But boy, did he have a career that is certainly worth fanfaring. He ran a northern English newspaper called the Northern Echo for a long time, and his passion, really, for investigative work, for crusading work, as the Washington Post called it, was exemplified there by him managing to redress completely a capital sentence, a death sentence, against a man called Timothy Evans, who was accused of murder. And in fact, the sentence was carried out. It's such a regrettable outcome. But at least Harry Evans managed to get Timothy Evans. He managed to get the case proven to be an entirely unwarranted and unfair verdict, and in fact the fact that the error of the judicial system was judged to be so egregious that it's not unfair to say that that helped to move Britain along the road to actually abolishing the death penalty. And then when he came later to run the Sunday Times in London, there were many extraordinary investigations that a particular team on that newspaper, the Insight team, carried out were remarkable. I guess the case that he's most regarded for would be the thalidomide case, exposing the degree of appalling birth defects induced by the drug thalidomide made by the pharmaceutical company that was owned by the distiller's financial empire, and managed to he campaigned very successfully for the distiller's company to be held responsible, and in the end they ended up paying massive compensation to the victims of this terrible drug. And they also, at the Sunday Times, did remarkable investigations into the Philby case, the espionage double agent case of Kim Philby. They investigated the life out of. They spent years revealing how the British British MI6. Espionage service was riddled with devil agents and had a blindness, a class-based blindness. It was often the explanation offered up for how blind they were to the traitors within their midst. If an agent was our kind of chap, was the sort of attitude, then he couldn't possibly be a traitor. Seemed to be the attitude. But Harry was good at pin pricking attitudes of pomposity and overweening sense of privilege. So that was all of a match with much of his work. So R.I.P. Sir Harold Evans, and I want to put on record my regard for that man, and say that, you know, sometimes journalism does make a difference, and the kind of journalism that Harry headed up, mostly by picking really, really good people to do the work, the very important and very difficult investigative work that they did, that kind of journalism is getting rarer and rarer. So the passing of Harry is one sad sign of that.
Okay, we'll move on from that story to, of course, the latest story in this country. And really, our allies from afar must be looking in and just wondering what's going on. You know, the president claiming that the election is rigged all the time sets a mindset with his 32% of the voters that are actually hard and core Trump supporters that the election is rigged. So in case he loses the election, he could challenge it. His press secretary said basically the same thing. But what's really worrisome is the way other Republicans have responded to this. I mean, there has not been a sense of outrage that the president of the United States is setting the scene for mayhem in the case of a close election. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the winner of the election will be inaugurated on January 20th. There'll be a transition. Well, that's totally too mild. Also, the senator from Nebraska, Republican, the president says crazy stuff. We've always had a peaceful transition of power. Yeah, this president always has said crazy stuff, but he said it for three and a half straight years. And then you have Lindsey Graham chipping in the following. He has said, quote, if there's a court challenge to the election, it'll be decided in court, and the loser of the challenge will accept the results. Once again, this is a party that allows the president to do things that are way above the norm. They allow him to hold political rallies in the White House. They allow him to really question. And then, unexpectedly, as if we didn't expect it to happen, 9 ballots were found supposedly thrown away in Pennsylvania. He gets his Justice Department to start talking about the investigation while the investigation is not nearly over. I mean, these are all huge warning signs.
Yes, it's the kind of behavior. I mean, you were asking, you know, what our allies in the world at large might be thinking about this, and I can tell you, I've been reading a lot of international coverage of America, of course, during this election campaign, and yes, it reminds everyone of the behavior of the leader of. You know, the usual phrase we come to is the banana republic or a Ruritanian monarchy. the Ruritania being that fictional country that you know, ridiculous goings on occur, sometimes also called the Empire of Megalomania. That's the kind of behavior we've got. We've got behavior which is all too familiar overseas with countries that are not democratic at all, or democratic only in name, and whose election systems are manipulated by the man at the top. It usually is a man, we're getting all the signs of that same ridiculous but highly dangerous behavior from our own chief executive. And when it comes to, you know, finding evidence for the wild claims that he's making, that somehow or other mail-in ballots are inherently risky, the evidence produced for this is an instance of an incompletely investigated, you're quite right, incompletely investigated instance of, I think, a total of 9 votes in Pennsylvania, 7 of whom apparently were in favor of Trump, being thrown away by mistake, opened by mistake, is the reason given for how it happened. But again, you know, this is an investigation only partway through. Contrasted, by the way, with a case, one of the very few and extremely rare cases of manipulation of mail-in balloting, which is on record as a completed investigation and an indictment and a court trial and a sentence that happened a year ago. As I say, one of the very few cases. It happened in one of the Carolinas, and it was an organized effort by, guess who, a Republican campaigner who actually was found guilty of it, and in that case it involved getting a candidate squeaking through with about 900 votes. So, you know, compare the record. If it does happen, and it rarely, rarely does, it's on record as having been done by a corrupt Republican campaigner, and now the president is trying to make a case out of a tiny individual matter of a handful of votes, the actual circumstances of which have not been fully investigated. No one's been tried yet. No one's been charged. And yet, here we go. We're on this sort of megalomaniac, as I said, effort to discredit the whole system of mail-in ballot, you know, which is, you know, the ridiculousness of which is indicated by the fact that the president himself is on record as having mailed in his own vote. So, it has that Ruritanian whiff of ridiculousness, but also highly dangerous because it discredits the entire system and prepares his the madcap element of his supporters for a scenario in which he declines to accept the word of the American people when it's cast in vote form on November 4th this year. If he sees that he's losing, he's going to turn to this tactic of claiming everything was rigged against him.
And we'll leave it with the president right now, as he has lowered the bar on political behavior. So now lots of things are considered norm. This is what happened when the president, and I can't believe that he showed up, but he did. But the president showed up to pay his respect to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And here's what happened at that event. Now I want you to listen to this. See if we can. Well, you can hear the people in the background. They're booing the president.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
They're booing the president, and then they started the chant, "Make him leave, make him leave, make him leave." And this is what having loose lips in the White House has done to the political discourse in the rest of this country.
Yeah, it's a coarsening of the whole political fabric. That's clearly been happening, and we've got only We haven't got only the president to blame for that, of course, but in many ways he's a symptom as much as a cause of the decline in political standards, if you like, in behavior, and it. You know, it can stretch from that realm of discourtesy in public places and in public settings right through to horrible viciousness in the streets. So we've got what we voted for in a sense. Although it's highly questionable how many of us did vote for a Trump regime and how many people who voted for the Trump regime actually thought it would ever turn out the way it has.
You know, you just look at this, and you know that the political discourse started to get a little rowdy when Ronald Reagan was president, but then it died down, and then political discourse when George Bush was president really did pick up quite a bit, but it is now just totally out of control, and you can't put it back in the box anymore because the major parties participate in this, but. I don't understand why the president even showed up after what he said about her last wish being written by Democratic leaders. This is where I just don't understand the man and his administration. And this country really has got I'll ask your final question. I mean, we've got now, 50 days to the election, and then after the election, it's not until January. We're in for a very dangerous and rough last quarter here in this country.
It looks very much that way. The coarseness of attitude and sort of the way that politics is now conducted are, in a sense, I guess, we're running to the point where we haven't seen anything yet. If there is a great delay in the count in the end, then of course we're in for an even rougher ride from November 4th through to January 20th. That is clearly on the cards for us as we go into this final run of the actual election process.
I don't know about you, but I've been politically aware since I've been a sophomore in high school. And even before that, I remember as a young kid the assassination of President Kennedy. I don't think I've ever seen our national politics and our national image and our national unity so broken apart as I see it right now.
I've seen it in terms of this country, never as bad as this. I think it's safe to say. I mean, we had horrific times in 1968, and again, you mentioned the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There was in 68 the assassination of his brother Robert F. Kennedy, and MLK as well, Martin Luther King, riots in the streets. But now I think we're looking at something much more systemic.
And that's the major problem. It's not isolated. Well, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks, David. Thanks again for your commentary this morning, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to that.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find David's website at themediabeat.us. That is themediabeat.us.